Welcome back to the show. We're talking to Annalise Schinzinger on her new book, Ayahuasca: Opening to the Mysteries. Now, can you ask you how many times have you done ayahuasca?
Oh, 20 years.
Over lifestyle. 20, it's 20 been years? Part of her life so it's since like, she was a young thing.
I was introduced to ayahuasca. I was a student in Brazil. I went to Brazil originally to study when I was 20. And then at a time, I was at a juncture in my life.
Yeah.
I needed to make a decision whether to stay in Brazil. And I had started working as a model at that point. That's totally true.
You had a choice? It was an inflection point in your life where you could have gone in two directions. Like, what were the choices?
I was near completion of my 1 year, junior year abroad through the University of California. Uh-huh. And I had met a Brazilian, had fallen in love, and I needed to decide whether to return to California to finish my studies or allow the relationship to flower.
So you had a choice of either going back to school in the States or staying there with a new love.
Yes. And at that point, it was a very important decision in my life.
Sure,
and I was dealing with conflicts. I was raised by Quaker parents.
Quaker.
Who are academics. And
really, they must love this.
And they didn't, I actually didn't tell them at the time that I was working as a high fashion model.
Oh, okay.
That came later, that story.
Yeah.
With them. So well, there were conflicts because it wasn't the way I was raised.
Yeah.
And so I was introduced to ayahuasca at this point in time when I needed to make the critical decision whether to, which was life-changing. Right? Mm-hmm. I drank ayahuasca and I decided to stay in Brazil.
Was it someone that you trusted to introduce you to ayahuasca the first time? How did it come about?
Yes, I had been invited to spend some time at the home of a former top model. She was the one who introduced me to the modeling world in Sao Paulo.
Somebody in the modeling world then?
She had been a very successful high fashion model. Wow. She invited me to live with her, her husband, and her daughter.
So it's a pretty close relationship already.
That was a really close relationship. And then I met her stepson, who had just returned from 6 months with Krishnamurti in Switzerland.
Oh.
And so he is the one who told me about a tea that would be good for me. Those were his words. Didn't know anything about the tea. Didn't even tell me the name, but I wouldn't have heard of it.
Well, it was really
either.
Not publicly known 70s, very much back then, right? It was the very early discovery.
1977 in Brazil. Mm-hmm. Few people outside of the Amazon knew what ayahuasca was.
Yeah, I mean, when did Rick Strassman go there? Wasn't he?
Well, the Terrence.
They went in the 70s.
Yeah.
The 70s.
It was really brand new to the Western world.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was mostly indigenous communities and two rubber tappers, Irineo Seca, that founded the Santo Daime, and Mestre Gabriel, who founded the União do Vegetal, which is a spiritual group I ended up joining.
So in terms of its history, then it was originally a native tradition that spread out into Brazilian culture a little bit more widely, and then from there into the world.
Correct.
And you were at the point where it was Brazilian. It was part of becoming a larger part of the Brazilian scene.
I was introduced to ayahuasca at the point in time when it was being established south of the Amazon. There were some people in Brasilia who were drinking, but mostly the people who brought ayahuasca to Sao Paulo were Paulistas. They were from Sao Paulo. They were a group of actors. They could be considered hippies in the day.
Oh, yeah. Hippies responsible for this?
They went to Manaus. They were introduced to Ayahuasca, which is the name that União do Vegetal uses for ayahuasca.
Okay. What's that again? Ayahuasca?
Ayahuasca. H-O-A-S-C-A.
Is that different from ayahuasca at all? Is it?
It's a plant spirit teacher made from the union of two plants.
So Ayahuasca is the spirit of ayahuasca.
Ayahuasca is the name the UDV uses, and ayahuasca is the more globally known term, but each indigenous group has their name for it.
What did the indigenous population initially use it for? What was it?
They used it for divination, to track animals for hunting, to discern where the prey was, and also what other tribes were doing. There was a lot of witchcraft in those days.
So it was part
spells
of
being cast.
Ah, interesting.
But it was used also for healing.
Positive,
very,
uses,
very positive uses. Uh-huh.
I'm kind of curious, how would it make you a better hunter? Does it allow you to move your consciousness into the animal, or to or sense it from a distance, or what?
Well, two things. One, it can tell the person who drinks ayahuasca where the animals are.
How's that?
Well, the jungle is vast, and ayahuasca has many, many talents, you could say.
Yeah.
I've been guided on where to find the mariri, the vine, in the forest.
Really?
I saw it as a path of light, and this is jumping ahead a bit, but ayahuasca has the ability to shine light on anything.
Anything.
Yeah.
Anything
so
alive.
The important thing is intention, being really clear with intention. Hmm. So my intention for drinking ayahuasca has always been going within and learning the truth, healing, spiritual growth. That's why I really resonated with ayahuasca. I realized its potential for healing.
Hmm.
And on a physical, spiritual, emotional level.
What kind of healing, may I ask, is like physical, like it's like diseases that we know, or is it more mental, mental?
Well, it's each person on their own journey.
Uh-huh. So
some
everyone, whatever
people, can
people
see,
need, it turns into.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Interesting.
If a person is seeking healing, this is a friend told me, she saw exactly where the block was. I had an experience like that also. It removes the energetic. It helps shine light on the energetic blocks or the emotional
blocks. There's one thing I'm curious about. You referred it in a couple of different contexts that I'm wondering about. One is as a spirit that you communicate with, and another as a, what do you call it, brocharia or
brochera.
Brochera, yeah. And that was like it creates a space or a sense of sacredness that in which things happen in.
It's a field of consciousness, a unified field that is ever present. It's here. Ayahuasca helps people quiet their minds and be receptive, to tune in and be receptive to information that is being presented. And that has a lot to do with the person's intention.
Hmm.
So I don't recommend using it for recreational purposes, because that would be a waste. And
there are better drugs for recreation.
Better drugs for recreation.
It's not always fun with ayahuasca.
It has such potential.
Yeah.
So to really enter into communication with the plant spirit, which it is.
Yes.
It's like a counselor.
I wanted to ask you to describe ayahuasca as a diva, as a being, or as a nature voice. Like, I would love to hear you express kind of your relationship and your sense of that person or being.
Do you treat it like a human, or is it God?
Ayahuasca is, for me, is a first and foremost a spirit that helps guide humans to live a better life, to reconnect with nature. The word religião, which is the word for religion, is to reconnect. Mm. So many of us have been distracted, and you know, we go all kinds of ways on the path of life.
Yeah.
And for me, ayahuasca helped me go within, gain a lot of clarity, situations in my life that were problematic, helped me overcome an eating disorder, and trauma from sexual abuse and rape. The healing potential is huge. And ayahuasca, because over the years I cultivated a relationship with ayahuasca, I learned to trust her. I refer to her as a her, as a counselor.
Is it a presence? I mean, like for example, you said you're healing trauma. Now, a lot of, in modern therapy, a good therapist will take you back to the trauma moment and relive it and then reframe it. So that
what I experienced was a purging.
Does it take you there, or does it take you back to the trauma where you relive it or anything like that? Or Or is it there as a kind being that helps you, like a good therapist, to take you through?
I think it's really tailor-made for the person.
So each person gets the kind of sub-persona that works for them then, huh?
Right, right. Wow. When I had an experience that was a purging of numerous sexual assaults,
yeah,
I just had a flash of each one. It took me back just through that flash. I didn't need to relive in depth.
Wow. But just a...
It was a flash. It was a memory. It brought it to the surface and I purged.
Like a couple seconds?
Yeah. It was the imprint that it had had on my psyche, on my physical body. Mm. And the memory of it was just purged instantaneously because I was in that expanded state of consciousness and it was able to encapsulate it and just get it out of my system. It took years for me to get to that place to really be open and ready for that degree of healing and trust of ayahuasca.
So you had to build your trust with the ayahuasca spirit before it
Well, it's so interesting because my personal history involved trusting because of substances. Ayahuasca is a substance, it's a tea, it's called vegetal. Mm-hmm. The first time I had some alcohol that I got drunk, I was 17, I was in Moscow, I was almost raped, but I was saved in the nick of time.
Near Moscow.
But still very traumatic.
Very traumatic at 17.
Wow.
And since that moment, because I didn't have the ability to resist, I never again got drunk.
That was
in my life.
Alcohol?
That was it for alcohol because I had lost my ability to defend myself. I couldn't yell. I don't want to, you know, divert too much.
Right. So it was a really traumatic experience.
Very traumatic. The second time was.
And it was imprinted. Like
imprinted.
It became
imprinted.
Part of your identity.
Until you somehow can unimprint it?
Is well, I got there. It took a while.
Really?
This I just shoved it into the depths of my memory because I couldn't deal with it.
Yeah, sure.
And then the second time I was working as a model, I hired a British photographer to do my portfolio. And that photo shoot ended up in rape.
Someone you're supposed to be trusting.
An entrapment.
I'm really comfortable in front of when I'm on a runway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Probably because of my dance experience, ballet, modern dance, I can move on the runway. But having this man looking at me through a really big camera, I wasn't used to that yet. And so he encouraged me to have some cocaine, that it would help me relax. And I said, think so. I've heard about cocaine. Anyway, I was over the next 15 minutes, I was so embarrassed about not being able to relax in front of the camera, and I had hired him to be a professional, right?
Right. Yes.
So anyway, I agreed to take some cocaine, and it ended up putting me in a very metaphysical, because that's how I'm wired, I feel.
Yeah.
I go to the spiritual realms very easily.
Sure. I mean, you were raised on a mission with missionaries.
Pacifists.
Oh, pacifists. But
pacifists.
The fact that they were Quakers in China doesn't make them missionaries.
They weren't Quakers in China.
No, okay.
No, they're Quakers in California.
Oh, okay.
So where did the cocoa leaf spirit take you?
If it was, that would have been better. I've done that. So anyway, it ended up in rape. So when I was introduced to ayahuasca shortly after that, I was really wary of men who were giving me ayahuasca, right?
Men giving you stuff that will alter your
I mean, that is date rape drugs, right? Date rape is such an undiscussed topic in the reality of so many women. And yet here... It's wonderful to hear your story of how common it was.
I guess there's a shame and embarrassment that you got suckered into that and all that sort of thing. And
I didn't tell anybody for a long time. I was so embarrassed because I felt that I'd gotten myself into this situation.
That you deserved it on some level.
I never thought I deserved it. I was just embarrassed.
Oh, okay.
Well, very embarrassed. I didn't even tell my boyfriend. Didn't tell friends, didn't tell my family, nobody.
Wow.
So back to ayahuasca.
Yes.
I am so grateful to have been introduced to a tradition that has a safe container. The ritual itself has boundaries, clear boundaries. Mm-hmm. And I observed right away that the people who I was invited to participate in ceremonies with, mm-hmm. call them sessions, had great respect for the tea itself and for the ritual. Mm. And so there were parameters of conduct that were clearly established. And it also served the refinement of this ritual, served as a springboard, like a rocket ship, to be able to go to places in the unified field, other dimensions, very easily, or I should say more easily. Mm. So the ritual was established, divinely inspired by the founder, with shamadas, with invocations that are like prayer songs to call in more light, more force, and to regulate the experience. So I saw that I was with people who I could trust. They were men. UDV, it's men who are mestres, although Mestre Gabriel made his wife a mestre, gave her the star of mestre. Yeah.
And the mestres are the masters of the ceremonies. They hold the space and call in the guides and, right?
Right, a mestre is a master, sure. Mm-hmm. And whoever is in the role of a mestre, whether a woman or a man, mm-hmm. in a session is called the mestre because they're the ones who are really channeling the divine information. Yeah. So that trust was integral to my ability to surrender.
Mm. And once you did that, you were able to process all these traumatic events that were holding you back spiritually?
I wouldn't say holding me back spiritually, but definitely had an emotional impact. Mm. Because the healing, so I was introduced to ayahuasca when I was 21. Mm. And the healing took place when I was around 33. So it took a while. And it was a certain situation that prompted that. It's in my book. It prompted us just purging one incident after the other. Hmm.
Mm. But you did take them on individually with different...
They came up. I didn't have to imagine anything.
So in a sense, the spirit was like the therapist who kind of brought up what you needed to process next.
Yes.
But knew what you needed.
Exactly.
So did you give it permission to scan you and be able to...
Other times, other sessions, yes. Uh-huh. What happened with this one is it was the context, which my book... chapter in the book addresses, but it was like the perfect storm. It was a perfect situation that prompted all these memories that were stuffed inside to just unfurl one by one. And it was amazing how in 1 hour I could heal, do so much healing of those experiences. They were, started when I was 12. Nothing in my family, no abuse at all in my family, people I didn't know, just different things that happened over the course of my life when I was traveling, living abroad, numerous things.
I got to ask you, is this your first experience of therapy at all?
No.
You had more normal human therapies before this and after?
Yeah. I've had my share of therapy.
Yeah, okay. How does it compare to a good therapy session?
Well, I'll tell you that the healing of the sexual assaults was so cathartic and so quick and deep that it took care of many different layers, which probably would have taken a long time because I had dealt with certain things with therapists. Mm-hmm. But it was the healing of, and I'll go into that in a moment, it was the healing of an eating disorder that was the most profound.
Well, I guess as a model, you're supposed to stay thin, right? That was part of
Well,
that.
I think the eating disorder preceded being a model.
Really?
It did.
Yeah.
It did.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. All right. Well, I know that you've marked certain parts of your book to read to us, and we'll be getting to that in the next hour.
Yeah. I appreciate you retelling because you talked about the photographer, George, the story, and that story is in the book. And so it's neat to hear you recount it live for us. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm kind of curious as to, after our break, how it unfolded for you, how it exists in for you today as well, or does it? It seems like it's gone more out onto a global scale. I'm kind of curious about what you think about all that, how it's spreading.
Yeah.
And will it save us all? Is it a key?
Well, yeah. How accessing our non-traditional states of consciousness is sweeping the planet and
Yeah, so we'll be right back. We're going to go to our break. And we are back. You're listening to the Future Now show. We're talking to Annalise Schinzinger about her new book on ayahuasca and its mysteries.
Opening to the Mysteries.
Opening to the Mysteries is the official name of the book. It's kind of funny that it's your latest book, and yet it sounds like it's a topic that you explored in the younger part of your life.
First of all, I started writing this in 1995.
Yeah.
And when I approached agents or publishers, invariably they would say, this is not fitting for our publishing house, or mm-hmm. for my representation, or this book is about drugs. We don't deal with books about drugs.
Oh, yes.
That was the 90s.
Drugs is a big verboten topic for a long time, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. So I put a lot of energy into finding a publisher in those days.
Yeah.
And it was actually accepted. Well, I won't go into that story because that's going to diverge too much. Then there came a time when I was asked not to publish it because the case for the legal use of ayahuasca in the UDV went to the Supreme Court.
Right. So it was up for judgment in the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Right. And it was a 5-year process. And I was told by the leaders of the UDV that anything I wrote could be twisted by the government in this legal case and interpreted in a derogatory way.
Yeah.
And anything. So
they had a lot of media savvy.
Yeah. Well, they still do that. I mean, they twist, you know, the news twists for whatever direction they.
Well, yeah, but I feel like that trend has been on the rise. And the leadership, they all, I think, embraced dishonesty sometime in the last 30 years. I think we used to have a fairly trustworthy culture in the 70s when you were getting started.
Yeah, I'm not talking about the media. I'm talking about the U.S. government.
Yeah. Because it was the prosecution versus defense
model. It went through several appellate courts before getting to the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I have great respect and appreciation and gratitude for the UDV, for ayahuasca. And I didn't want to do anything to interfere with the process of legalization.
Yeah, you want to make sure they can have. Did it happen, by the way?
It did, 2006, for the UDV. It was a unanimous Supreme Court decision. This was during Bush Jr.'s presidency.
Mm-hmm.
It was a landmark decision. Amazing that it was unanimous on the grounds of religious freedom. So I had held off publishing this book because I wanted to support that effort.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And then there was another legal case for 2 years, so I didn't publish. Finally, in 2014, I was given the green light by people in the UDV to publish the book. But at that time, I was working so much as an end-of-life doula, as a caregiver, and my world just revolved around that. And I decided that it was more important, there was more urgency in 2014 for me to finish my book about end-of-life care, an end-of-life guidebook.
I cannot endorse enough. I have read it cover to cover. It's called The Art and Science of Caregiving, and it is such a great tool, and it's so full of beautiful stories. It's so heartful, and so the guide, I don't know if you've been keeping it up to date on the Art and Science of Caregiving website, but there's so many forms and questionnaires and URLs to give you ideas of how to approach end-of-life legalities and anticipation. So just a little plug. I know you can still buy it on Amazon, theartandscienceofcaregiving.com.
2019, I think, was the publishing. Yeah.
2019.
Yeah. That's a great book. I enjoyed that. I love the way you go into case histories, the ones that you actually lived. You know, it was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks.
Where I really got to know you as a storyteller and got a little preview of trying to tell the stories in this book.
So, because how does it link to this? How did ayahuasca help you become a death doula? Help people?
That is a very key question. Thank you.
Yeah.
So my second session, and the first session prompted me to want to stay in Brazil. And what I realized that on a superficial level, it was because of a love interest.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just realized 2 days ago that it was really to learn about love in the biggest and best sense of the word. I'm so grateful that I stayed in Brazil because of that relationship, but it gave me an opportunity to drink vegetal, to drink the tea, uxá, drink ayahuasca, ayahuasca many times, many times. Mm-hmm. So the second session was in a natural setting. It was in the woods on the outskirts of Sao Paulo. We were maybe 8 people, very small. Mm-hmm. And in that session, I didn't experience much of a buhashira myself. It's the expanded state. Mm. I was so focused on the friend, Peter, who told me about the tea that would be good for me. He was there. Mm-hmm. It looked like he was wrestling inner demons. He was moaning and groaning and writhing on the forest floor. And I was really concerned about him. So I went over and I sat by him. And my inner guidance said, just be here with him. Mm-hmm. Don't touch him. Don't interrupt his experience. Just be here for him.
Wow. Mm. So the spirit was instructing you in a way, but it was instructing you on how to be supportive of your friend.
Exactly. Wow. And that laid the foundation for my work later on to be with the dying. Mm. When the session ended, sessions are 4 hours, when it ended, Peter thanked everyone present for the support that he had, and he said he had relived his birth. He was going through the birth canal. It was so challenging, so painful for him, but he said it was deeply healing.
Wow.
And that's when I realized the profound ability of ayahuasca, to facilitate going within, reliving traumas, and healing.
Wow. Mm.
And so it's not just reliving it intellectually, it's actually going through the birth canal.
Re-experiencing.
Wow.
Yeah. So that session actually gave me the realization of the potential. And that's when I decided to become a member. Because I realized the wide field ahead.
Wow.
Is it something you'd ever use for someone going through end of life? Or do they have to have that experience earlier in their life for ayahuasca to be beneficial?
It can be very cathartic. So I wouldn't say someone who's really frail. I wouldn't recommend it except if it was a smaller dose. Mm. But
like microdosing ayahuasca, is that possible?
Yeah. I honestly don't have experience with that. But I do know that one of the researchers, Charles Grobe, who participated in the Ayahuasca Project, the study done in 1993, that Dennis McKenna
is the one who
wrote the protocol for this research study in Manaus. And then, so Charlie did this project, right? As a psychiatrist, I was the interpreter. He asked the questions and I interpreted for the UDV members, the 15 UDV members who were the subjects, the experimentees. Mm-hmm. So I translated their responses and his questions. Mm-hmm. So Charlie went on to use mushrooms in studies with stage 4 cancer patients. Those are well-documented studies.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer your question about end of life, right?
Yeah.
He would be a good person to have on the show. He's a psychiatrist. He's working in Los Angeles, UCLA Medical Center with a new department, psychedelic medicine.
Yeah, so the direction that I'm curious about with your experience with the ayahuasca diva is the connection between states of meditation and the brahmacharya that you're talking about and that ascension into your perception of unity consciousness, right?
Yeah. So the buhashira is the state of expanded consciousness, and it's when we're in the unified field. When we're in a group of people, and that's why I was so appreciative of the UDV's ritual.
Uh-huh. Oh, I see you
have potentiated.
You're going to read a little something about that.
I will read about it, yes.
Okay, great.
So the person, as I mentioned, who conducts the session is called the Mestre.
Okay.
So this is a friend of mine, Mestre Glauco Brito, who said this. Spiritual teachings are spoken to the heart, addressing the heart so that they will go directly to the heart. This is an oral tradition. The teachings aren't written down. It's in the expanded state, in the buhashira, that the teachings are given, and it's not just the words, it's an experience. It's like a transmission, and it's an experience of the truth. There are cases of numerous people who attended sessions, and they thought the sessions were being given in German or French, you know, their native language, but it was Portuguese. But they lived the teaching. They lived the words of the message. So it's a state of consciousness that facilitates comprehension.
Like a universal language almost, huh?
Yeah, and it's delivered telepathically. It's delivered through the senses. I'm a very visual person, so that's how I see things. There are moments when there's a knowingness, a clear knowingness of the truth about something. Other people are more receptive in an auditory way.
So it has access to what they call all the clairs, right? The clairvoyance, the clairaudience, the clairsentience, etc.
So these things become real to you. They're not just abstract intellectual ideas anymore. Telepathy, the empathy, the connection.
Telepathine. DMT has telepathy.
Yeah, that is an interesting question. Is it, how does it compare to other psychedelics?
The tea, I call it Usha. That's what we call it in Brazil, in the UDV, Usha, the tea. So it is made in the UDV from Banisteriopsis copy and Psychotria viridis. Psychotria viridis is a leaf from a bush from the coffee family, and it has the telepatina. It has the property of, it stimulates telepathy, and we have DMT in our brains.
And one of it is the monoamino oxidase that allows it to last a longer time, because otherwise your body disassembles that molecule.
Yeah, quickly. There's a whole chapter about the scientific and...
Right, yeah, so it lasts more than 5 minutes.
Yeah, they're the blockers does, so that they
but it is, but it's active, longer. Part of the active element is dimethyltryptamine in ayahuasca.
Yeah.
Now, on the end of life, now, is it also true that dimethyltryptamine is released in the brain at the moment of death? Have you heard
I've heard that. Yeah, I've heard that.
So that experience has some parallels to...
Well, one of the gifts of ayahuasca is being able to prepare for death. It can prompt the shamanic death, the death of the ego.
Yeah.
But all the preparation that we can do prior to our final moment in this existence is a good idea. Emotional preparation, physical, spiritual, not to wait until the last few weeks or months.
Yeah, so I got to ask you, I assume then you're not afraid of death?
I am not.
And has ayahuasca played a role in that, letting go of that fear?
It has, as well as my work and my understanding of those who have come back.
Yeah.
With their near-death experiences, including my former husband. I believe in the continuity of consciousness. The physical body drops away.
So what happens? Yeah. I mean, go ahead, Sen. You want to...
Well, I'm just asking if ayahuasca helps create some kind of mediumship. Like, do you have the ability to connect with, say, your previously passed friends and relationships?
Well, let me share...
Your continuity
Something
of consciousness,
that,
my dear. What is your continuity of consciousness?
Well, I'm still alive.
Yeah.
But
I mean, with past lives, future lives.
I have connected with so many people I have cared for and family members who have passed.
Wow.
It's part of...
Their living spirit, like
their
even though they're gone.
Spirit.
So you, and this is no doubt to you. This feels like you really talk to their spirits. And.
Oh, yes. I've, for many, many, many years, I've received information through dreams. And it's when my rational mind is dormant and I'm very receptive. So ayahuasca is that and more. Because my rational mind isn't interfering. When I totally surrender, then it's spirit, direct connection with spirit. And so to answer your question, one of the experiences I had with ayahuasca was with my grandfather. I wrote about it in my caregiving book, but I didn't mention the word ayahuasca because then I would need to go into depth about what ayahuasca is. So
big rabbit hole.
Yeah. So I went into it more completely in this book. And after my grandfather passed, I drank ayahuasca and I connected with him. I would just open myself.
That was your intention?
That was my intention.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just opened myself to connect to his spirit. And what came was an enormous ear. An enormous ear.
And I'm listening.
Message was listen.
Oh, you listen.
Yes. Well, advice for life is listen. My grandfather was an exemplary human being. He was, for all practical purposes, blind in his late teens. Yet he went on to get a PhD in philosophy. He was German.
World War II? Is he German? Was he alive then? Did he live in America? Or
he lived in Japan during World War II.
He's German living in Japan in World War II?
Yeah, he went after World War I, because he was, for all practical purposes, blind.
Yeah.
It would have been very difficult to get a job as a philosopher, professor, in Germany. So he and his wife, Anneliese, who I'm named after, went to Japan when they were 25.
What year was that?
Oh, gosh.
30s?
No,
20s.
Probably 22, 23.
Oh, I see. So it was before the Reich, the Third Reich then.
Right. And my grandfather refused to go Heil Hitler. He was respected by the emperor. He received awards both by the German chancellors post-Hitler and the emperor because of his contribution to education. He was a very humble man and deeply intelligent. And he listened. Every single lecture was different. He couldn't rely on notes because he didn't have the eyesight.
I see,
And he co-wrote a German-Japanese dictionary with two colleagues. He could hear a poem once, a lengthy poem, and commit it to memory and recite it. So his message to me via the giant ear was, listen, it was so appropriate. And what it did was help me listen with every cell of my body, with my skin, with my eyes, with all my senses. And so I applied that to every situation. The ear would show up when I was with somebody talking. It's, okay, listen. Listen more deeply. Even when I was making love with my boyfriend at the time, listen, like listening from within, really feeling. And we were talking earlier in our conversation about empathy, how ayahuasca is an incredible tool for helping us feel the pain of others. Animals, a child, people in war situations, someone who's been betrayed. There's so many causes of pain in our human existence. So,
and this helps you step in the other people's shoes.
Exactly, exactly. There's so many cases of living another person's pain.
Wow.
So we were talking during the break about how the world could benefit from more empathy, right? I think Jane Fonda even spoke about that. But empathy is something that I have cultivated. It arose so easily, it arises so easily with ayahuasca that I've been able to apply that to my work.
Empathy is, I think, is one of the higher virtues of good cinema, being able to see someone else's life and step into their shoes. And,
well, and have, really just good golden rule behavior on the planet. If you're going to have some kind of philosophy, having a philosophy where it's not that you're an elite who's telling others what to do without care for how they might feel about it, compared to if you're a genuine aspiring source of divinity trying to live your greatest life and understand what other people might be wanting for them, for themselves.
Sure. Hey, did you see that AI video of Trump taking ayahuasca?
No.
Going through a transformation.
Oh, it was hilarious. It's an AI animation of enlightened Trump.
Oh, if only.
Well,
that's a prayer to hold.
That's the great power of today's media, is that whatever we can imagine, we can
reframe the memes.
So, what would be good to imagine? Do you have any imagination yourself on what you'd like to see happen? A vision?
Well, in regards to our beautiful planet, that has the sensitivity. I've always been a sensitive person, and I've always loved nature. But my appreciation of nature increased tenfold, twentyfold through ayahuasca. Being able to perceive nature spirits, and just really appreciate things. And I want to share something from one of my experiences in the Amazon, because it has to do with respect. I went with 20 Brazilians in the Amazon, Western Amazon, to collect seedlings. This is an area, a large area that was going to be bulldozed the next day. And we were walking in a dense forest, and we traversed an area that had been bulldozed already, this massive vegetation. And we heard a singing wren, rapuru, and just knowing that that part of the forest was just going to be demolished the next day.
Wow.
So there was a rubber tapper with us, and in no time at all, he had two bushels of the chacrona, the Psychotria viridis, seedlings on his back. And I hadn't found a single one. I was so embarrassed. I felt like the inept American who just wasn't attuned to nature, right? And but I am. I feel I am attuned, but I just could not see the chacrona. So I asked my friend Siglia, I said, Siglia, can you help me? And she said, just be quiet, still your mind, set your intention, and ask for permission.
Ask for permission.
Ask for permission to collect this plant, the sacred plant. So I did that, and I opened my eyes, and there was a chacrona right in front of me.
Right in front of
you. Right in front of me at my feet.
Wow. Interesting.
So like the invisible realms, like we will show ourselves if you respect us.
And acknowledge their existence in a sense too, eh?
Yeah.
And so your ability to see was dependent upon your ability to connect.
Yes. And to have that reverence and appreciation, to enter the vibratory field where I could see the plant.
Wow.
And
amazing.
The story I touched on earlier was another experience deep in the jungle.
Oh, can you put a bookmark in it?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. The next experience in the jungle. We're going to go real quick to a little Santa Cruz voice and then more.
Welcome back to the show. We're talking to Annalise Schinzinger on her new book, Ayahuasca: Opening to the Mysteries.
Back to where we were. We were traipsing through the jungle and tuning into another story about the connection with ayahuasca and the unified field.
Oh, one other question before we dig into that. There's a question about whether or not this is your...
Robert Schinzinger. That was
Robert
my grandfather.
Schinzinger, yes. Robert Carl Edmund Schinzinger, born 1898 in Yokohama, Japan. Japanese German philosopher. Okay, that's in Wikipedia. Robert Schinzinger.
It's in German Wikipedia. He had it translated into English.
Oh, very good.
He did. Huh? Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bobby.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
That's cool. Okay. Well, excellent. A little bit of history here.
And don't you just love all the internet and information that's on the information superhighway? So cool.
Yeah.
So tell us about the story.
You have another bit you're going to read to us, right?
I'll read after.
Yeah. After,
This experience was deep in the Amazon. I went with my friend Moasir, who participated in the Ayahuasca Project. He's a professor of botany, and he has a television show in Manaus about plants. So he's a maestri in the UDV. So he took me on several trips deep into the Amazon. I'm so grateful. I have several chapters about these places he took me.
You mean where there's just native people living, no stores? No stores, no.
This was a rubber tapper community. And we went there to gather the plants. When Moasir connected with these indigenous people or descendants of indigenous who were, you know, married, more vegetalistas.
They were part of the rubber tapper community?
Part of the rubber tapper community,
the rubber tapper is the people that tap trees to get rubber, is that?
Right.
Like that was before it was synthetic?
Right. Or,
yeah.
But even when he was with indigenous people who lived on tribal land, government-designated tribal land, they invited him to participate in a ceremony with them, ayahuasca ceremony, and then he invited them to participate in his ceremony, the Union de Vegetal ritual, right? And they really liked the ritual, and they said, oh, we want to learn how to do it your way. And he said, no, you have your traditions.
Yeah.
And the fact that he honored their way, their wisdom traditions, that boosted their self-esteem and value, self-value.
Yeah, everyone is acknowledged. Did the native traditions merge well with the, my understanding, the later Christian influences on the ceremonies? Or was there?
Well, it was the rubber tappers who were given ayahuasca by another rubber tapper who had been given it by someone who was indigenous, right?
So I'm just getting that these ancient peoples, before it entered the Western culture, there were different human guardians working with different parts of the ecosystem. That sounds almost like Native American, like they really had a relationship directly with the plants and not just the ayahuasca experience, but there were guardians of different life forms.
In regards to ayahuasca, there are reported 360 indigenous groups across the Amazon and Orinoco basins prior to missionaries coming. So that really changed it.
Yeah, I was just wondering how the missionaries affected the ayahuasca ceremony, or did they?
Many fewer tribes. Originally, there were more.
Yeah.
And it's hard to guesstimate how many exactly, but there were reported 360 across the Northern Incan Empire. So there are the Ashaninka, there are different tribes that are direct descendants of the Inca who are ayahuasca drinking tribes.
Wow. Mm. Were there any that were cannibals?
No.
No?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
Yeah. I can't go into that because I don't know about that.
Okay, fair enough.
So it's an ancient tradition. It's a part of indigenous culture still, and it has continuity that goes back before it was touched by the modern world.
And what ayahuasca did was help people live in balance with the earth in their environment, right?
Mm-hmm. Was there less war in those cultures? Or was there?
Oh, lots of tribal warfare.
So warfare still existed despite all of this.
And quite a lot of it.
It's not all peace and love, people, on the alternate planes.
Yeah.
Okay,
I'm referring to the respect for nature and other living beings.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah, respect opens the doors, because otherwise you get the guarded experience.
Yeah. And one of the most remarkable things that I heard was about an ayahuasca teacher who moved from the jungles of Brazil to the high Incan plains, and he brought bottles of ayahuasca with him. And part of his process was to talk to the plants in whatever area he was in. Mm-hmm. And after a month or so at the new location, he introduced his friends and neighbors to all the plants and what they were good for. Like he knew.
I had a taste of that, and I'll share that.
Okay. It's like the plants spoke to him about telling them how they related to us as our species.
Yeah, I drank ayahuasca, rami, with the kulina. And Moasir took me to this area, this tribal land with the kulina. Mm-hmm. And the shaman, Mau, led the session. The session was going to be the ritual, the ceremony, right? Mm-hmm. Was going to be outside on ceremonial ground. But because it was pouring rain, we drank in a hut. Mm. And we were all
cozied up.
Lots of people in that little hut.
And while it rained,
I'm sure it poured outside. Yeah.
A real jungle wash.
And it was beautiful. It was so beautiful. Mm. The chanting went on for hours.
Wow.
And first it was Mau, and then a woman, and then some men, and then women, and together and just interwoven for 3 hours. It was magical. So during those 3 hours, everything was in the Kulina language. And I saw Pau d'Arco, which is used in this country. It grows in the Amazon. It's a tree. And I saw it like a pipe cleaner, that it goes in the body and it cleans out everything. It stimulates, it's known to stimulate the immune system, and some people use it.
It's such a wonderful, sweet-smelling bark when you burn it. Yeah. Yeah, nice. And so they use it for sort of cleansing, huh?
Yeah. Uh-huh. The name Pau d'Arco is like the wood with the arc, mm-hmm. right? So I saw the connection with the spirit realm and the human body and its ability to bridge that and to penetrate the body with these properties. So that was one. And then I saw other spiritual plants. And then I heard the word Jatoba, and I saw that it was actually the word in their language for Jatoba. Jatoba is a medicinal plant also that's used for bronchial ailments, respiratory problems, and I was having one at that time. And so that was shown to me as being important.
And the plant, it showed it? How did it show it to you? Directed your attention somehow?
Well, I heard the name. It really prompted me to, it was Noah, and it sounded like Noah.
So it was like an audio?
Well, I heard the name, and then I saw like a forest of Jatoba.
You saw it?
Simultaneous. Oh. Right? And then afterwards, I asked the shaman, what does Noah mean? And he said it was Jatoba.
And he said it was Jatoba.
Yeah.
Do you see it as a vision?
I saw it as a vision.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing I saw was these giant, like, tweezers.
Really?
Anyway, it
like
was...
metal tweezers?
Metal tweezers.
Giant metal and tweezers.
That was, and then he said in Portuguese, has a nene. He was praying for a baby that was about to be born.
Wow.
And so, yeah, magic happens. Wow. Magic happens. It was one of my most memorable ceremonies with the Kulina, for sure. And they gave me a name, Haiza. I used that name.
Haiza.
Haiza.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah. Does it have a meaning, a translation?
It does, but I was so happy that I had been given that name that I didn't think about asking the reason. And when I asked Moasir to ask them later on one of his subsequent visits, he said, they're telling you, you have to come back.
Okay. Oh, I see.
That's a long journey.
Well, it sounds like you're not done yet.
If any of you folks have any questions for Annalise, 831-338-7228.
I have something I'd like to read about how Ayahuasca works.
Oh, please.
The unifying focus and intention of participants in sessions raises the vibration of the energy field. Ayahuasca leads people into their hearts, focusing attention on the core of what matters, our heart connection with the divine. With the assistance of shamadas, which are prayer songs, and carefully selected music, participants are drawn to the light by the force and divine nature of ayahuasca. Upon hearing the opening invocations, a large number of participants forming an energy body collectively enter a field of unified consciousness. So it's this field.
That's the field that you tune into, and then things happen in the field.
Right. And so when
the space.
Two or more are gathered in my name, right? Mm-hmm. It's just that it's a more potent.
Yeah.
The experience is more potent.
Sure.
But it's definitely potent with just one person directly communicating if there's that alignment and intention.
Yeah.
It makes sense that we're talking about a field of energy, a field of conscious energy, and that would naturally be an amplifier for anybody who is participating in it. Because it's like you're calling it a unified field. It's sort of like your personal radio receiver gets a stronger signal because there's more energy involved in tuning into it.
What strikes me is also is that it's not just something you're talking about. It's you feel it, right? It's the field is real. You know when it's on, you know when it's not.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know when you're
and you know when other people are in it too. You can feel the connection others are having with that field.
Right. Uh-huh. I want to share something that we're talking about Gaia, right?
Uh-huh.
Talking about planet Earth.
Yeah.
This is an experience I had.
Okay, on connecting with the Gaia?
Connecting with Gaia, yes. The first time I experienced woman as an embodiment of Gaia was on the wedding day of friends celebrated in a UDV session in Sao Paulo. The purity of the young bride served as a portal of consciousness to the state of the planet prior to human disregard. In the Buhasheira, I experienced the awesome, pristine, virginal beauty that suffused Gaia's paradise of forest, rivers, and waterfalls before the heavy-handedness of humans upset the balance. Mm. I was invited into this sacred place, accessed through the inner sanctum of woman, and was shown that it is a portal to Gaia's womb a magnificent chamber of creation. During that session, I realized an old truth, that the human body is the temple of our consciousness and physical existence. And another truth, that as guardian of the womb, woman is guardian of this treasure, this consciousness and potential for procreation. I was shown how women are given the responsibility of embodying and taking care of their sacred garden, and how it is a blessing to be invited to experience the inner wisdom of the divine feminine in us all. The second time I experienced my body self as Gaia was excruciating, but no less meaningful than the first. In the Buhashira, the sacred energy of Gaia was flowing through my body. Merging with the energy and intelligence of Gaia enabled me to experience her beauty and wonder, and also the destruction of those gifts. I was thrashed by bulldozers raping my body, leaving me denuded, barren, and scarred. Acres of deep tread marks crisscrossed my chest. As Gaia embodied, I was in agony from this abuse and the damage inflicted on our planet. I realized on a visceral level that destruction of the living earth is being done to women worldwide every second of every day. And this is men and children also, of course.
Mm. Wow, that's very powerful.
Talking about stepping in other shoes, you're stepping into the pain of our species.
Of our planet.
Of the planet.
Our planet, the living being. Pain.
So the planet feels pain, not just us.
Yeah.
The spirit of ayahuasca, do you think it has a relationship with the Gaia as a whole? Do you think the spirits talk to each other? That there's there, or are they all the same? They all recognize they're part of the
one? I feel they're all part of the one, all okay. Emanations. Oh. And ayahuasca seems very well suited for humans, for yeah. Our consciousness, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you think other species would have other things. But what about the planet itself? Do you think the Earth is in touch with other type M planets in the galaxy? I mean, do you think that the life goes on a large scale, a huge scale?
Oh, like I definitely believe that.
Well, then if they're in touch with each other, then maybe they can exchange life forms with each
other? Well, it's interesting that in one of the sessions with Moasir, deep in the jungle, there were two Kashinawa indigenous people with us who had come.
Uh-huh.
This was many experiences in the jungle that are just amazing. And in this particular session, three of us saw green lights, two with our eyes closed and one with eyes open. So there are a lot of visitations. There are a lot of
other intelligences.
Intelligences seen in the Amazon by indigenous people who don't know about, who wouldn't conjure this kind of thing.
Yeah,
right?
They normally don't not think about galaxies or whatever.
Well, and you know, from a humble point of view, they probably know a lot more than many of us. They're probably in direct contact.
Different context for understanding it, I guess.
Yeah, but there are many sightings.
Yeah.
And so a friend and his 8-year-old daughter saw a mothership right outside of a session, a UDV session.
Wow.
And it was huge. It was in the sky. And it obviously noticed that they were seeing it because it hovered according to their connection, their viewing. And I've had some experiences myself. One was with ayahuasca when I was grieving the death of my cat, the passage of my cat, and a spaceship showed up. And I was being, there was a beautiful blue color that was being transmitted to me. When I asked a friend afterwards, and she said blue is the color of letting go. It's like a royal blue.
Oh, beautiful. I have a question for you that's kind of out of left field, I think. But I once worked with an author whose name was Diego Saez Gil, and he's very involved in creating a company called Pachama, like Pachama, that's goal is to help save the earth by digitizing a map of all the trees in the Amazon so that they can use that for creating a financial system that will help support the rainforest. And he described in his book a sensation of his journey with ayahuasca where he saw the light of all of the trees, but it was as if it was in like a virtual world. And I just wonder if you've ever thought of or experienced anything that is about the Gaia spirit relating to technology and the new human that is so technologically oriented?
Well, I think it's a great opportunity for someone who's very involved in the tech world to, I'm shifting things, right, to experience ayahuasca and to see how they can apply it, apply the wisdom they receive.
See how it might connect. It seems like ayahuasca is connected with many different cultures. Why not the tech one too?
I mean, he was describing his download from his encounter with ayahuasca, and I think it was maybe giving him a mirror of his consciousness to reflect on or something.
Should anyone avoid ayahuasca?
Well, people who are on antidepressants, there's some, when, I'll just speak from my experience with the Union de Vegetal. There's an initial interview to see what the person's habits are, what they're like, because certain chemicals conflict with.
The divas don't get along.
Yeah, know your chemistry a little bit.
Know your chemistry, yeah.
Yeah, I think Lorenzo Haggerty said that once he started experiencing ayahuasca, the ayahuasca diva said that she would not tolerate his addiction to marijuana. Like, he really had to let go of one or the other.
Yeah, ayahuasca is the great teacher.
Yeah. And speaking of chemists, you had an early experiences with Terence McKenna and his brother Dennis in the 70s, and you were the Portuguese translator. Is that true?
For Dennis. Yeah,
Dennis,
I knew Terence, but I worked with Dennis on the Ayahuasca project. I was an interpreter for that project. So this was Dennis's idea. He obtained the funding. He established the protocol.
This was the early 90s then.
93 was when it was done.
That's about when and I met in 92.
The early part of this lifetime honeymoon.
Yeah, Terence was pretty famous back then, and his
brother. we were invited to the Mondo magazine interview with Terence McKenna because Al was working with Mondo at the time, and Wes Thomas had lined up the interview.
We were up in Occidental.
That's
where they lived.
Yeah. That's right. We have a 2-hour interview with them online. Completely unedited on YouTube right now. You want to hear Terence and their form.
Yeah. I have become a big fan of Dennis.
And he was more the scientist, right?
He's a humble person. He's wise. He's kind. He's thoughtful. Terence definitely had the gift of gab.
Yeah.
Right? He was a storyteller, a weaver, amazing person. And Dennis is a scientist. And he's been very active in conservation work.
Doesn't he have an incredible online dictionary of herbs and plants, right?
Yeah, he has been at the forefront of many important projects. The Academy, the McKenna Academy of Natural Philosophy. Oh, he's done so much work.
Yeah.
Huge body of work. If you go to the website, you can see all the things that he's involved in.
Dennis, yeah. Okay, I'll put a link to that. Any misconceptions about ayahuasca that need to be cleared up?
If they express their views to me and I find that they're inaccurate, I'll clarify them. Okay. But it hasn't been...
No popular misconceptions as far as you know.
Well, I find it very interesting that starting maybe 15, 20 years ago, a journalist from the New York Times, for example, would drink ayahuasca once and write about it.
Yeah.
Sure.
For me, ayahuasca has been a life path.
Mm-hmm. Not a once in a lifetime thing, but
no, it's been a spiritual journey. I really embraced it as a way of living.
Yeah,
I'm not a member anymore. I left, but I continue to respect the tradition, even though it has become more authoritarian. You could say it's changed with the times. I'm grateful to have been a member during the founding days in Sao Paulo.
Yeah, those early days. Yeah.
Early days.
It's very exciting.
Listen, we've got about a minute.
Yeah, do you have any questions?
Well, and also don't forget to tell people where to look for the book
we'll
and how to
too.
Spell ayahuasca.
Yeah. Ayahuasca, till we're done. Opening to the Mysteries, is available online on Amazon. For locals, it's at the Bookshop Santa Cruz.
And that's AYAHUASCA. Ayahuasca, Opening to the Mysteries by Annalise Schinzinger. Okay, Bobby, you got a minute.
I was just fascinated by the whole show.
Glad to hear it. The people to contact you at all directly, do you have an email or anything you want to share?
A. Schinzinger, @gmail.com.
ASCHINZINGER @gmail.com.
All right. Well, very good. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, my website. I want to give a plug for my beautiful website that Sun
Yeah, okay. We're about to sign off.
Ayahuascaopening.com.
Ayahuascaopening.com. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Have a great future now. Thanks, everybody. Bye. Thanks.
Thank you.
See you next time.